Good morrow, dear gentle hearts, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary and behind the scenes of YouTube creator of my life. And it's the 14th of June 2025 it's about 7 o'clock in the morning on a damp morning, wet. I thought there was going to be a big thunderstorm. If there was, I fell asleep through it. There was a roll of thunder and a couple of streaks of lightning as I went to bed. But that was it. That was all I was aware of. And I slept right through till five and had a little tinkle and then got up about 15 minutes ago. I feel refreshed. So it was nice to have a good snooze. And I didn't get up as I had been getting up at, well, I woke up at five, but I wasn't quite ready to get up and sit outside as I have been doing the last couple of days and doing my meditation and such. So I went back to bed. Anyway, I've made myself a cup of coffee and I am yawning, as one does. You know what it's like when you listen to the old Voby first thing in the morning. But a cup of coffee has been created and it is being slurped from the very lovely raw milk, made with the lovely raw milk from Berry Farm. Well, it's not Berry Farm, but it's to Charlie's Farm. I was watching a video Julia sent me. She'd spotted that our friend John Cook, he is struggling, not in a bad way. It's in the past, they have had depleted grass in the winter, and they're not making enough milk for their supplies, their customers. And this time, of course, the cows are happy, the grass is plentiful, apparently, and they're making too much milk. They can't get rid of it. And so, unfortunately, because it has a limited shelf life, it's being poured down the drain. So he was just making a plea, I think, on Facebook, that if anybody wants milk and haven't tried it, or they want a quantity to make butter and things like that, now's a good time to get it, because I dare say he could come up with a good deal for people. It's Dora's Dairy in Purton, near Swindon, in Wiltshire. And I thought to myself, when we were up and running on our little farmstead, you know, if that was the case, we'd come and take big bottles of it or big containers of it and do just that, turn it into butter. Then at least you could preserve it a lot longer and hopefully sell it or whatever. And that's what it just needs. And this is one of the things I think that is important about, and I may talk about this on the video today, this is the important thing about having a series of homesteads which are interconnected, don't rely on one another, but can interact or barter with each other, so that if one has a surplus, then others can come and say, well, great, you know, we do make butter, we'll take your milk and we can fashion it. And if there's a lack of something, in a similar way, if there's a lack of material or a lack of this, that and the other, or somebody needs help, or there's labour is short for whatever reason, then again people can come to each other's aids. It's a sort of you scratch my back, I scratch yours type situation. So I may mention this, I think, in the video. Hadn't really given it the video much thought. I'm sitting here, and this is what happens with the Naked Englishman, of course. It's a space, as you know, and I don't know whether people come and listen to this for the very first time. I dare say there's long-term listeners, probably not that many listeners, but there are people who must come at some point for the very first time and think, what is this strange podcast? And I don't know if there is any other podcast quite like this. I would love to know. I don't really I don't listen to podcasts myself, not on audio only. I don't know where. I don't have a podcast catcher, I suppose. Funnily enough, it doesn't strike me. I would love to listen because it saves you having to look at the visuals. And it's the sort of thing you can just stick on if you're a little bored for whatever reason, or you know, while you're cooking, and you're not having to, like, it's like the radio. I used to love listening to Radio 4. But for some reason, I suppose I've not investigated the wondrous world, and yet I've been one of the pioneer podcasters in this country. Isn't that strange? I started podcasting in January 2005 and was the fourth British podcaster to do so. I know that because there were only three others doing it when I got going. And in its embryonic form as the Richard Vobes Radio Show, before it became the Vobe Show. Anyway, so it's a bit odd, isn't it? I suppose I just keep myself busy. YouTube has become, for me, the sort of go-to place. But even then, I watch very little. I've been watching, I tell you what I have been doing. I've discovered that some of the old TV programmes from the 70s have been uploaded. And whilst I don't watch television per se, certainly not modern television, every now and again, I'll either find a very old film, a Margaret Rutherford, an Alistair Sim, a Laurel and Hardy, that sort of thing. Or I'll put on, what have I been watching? I watched an episode of The Saint, terribly hilarious because it's so dated, but bit fun. I've watched Minder. Do you remember Minder? I've watched a couple of those. You know, quite funny. A little bit of distraction, if you like. I prefer to read, if I'm honest. But when you're cooking and things like that, just have it on. I don't always finish it. I don't necessarily have, it's kind of a little escape to your childhood, isn't it? Escape to your youth. The Professionals with Bodie and Doyle, watch some of that. They're quite fun. Again, what's interesting about those programs more than anything else is to see the cars, the style of dress, the lack of chemtrails in the skies, for one thing. You know, that from a historic point of view, takes you right back. You know, the storylines are quite weak, really, but they've got to fill whatever it is, an hour, is it? So, yes, occasionally watch some of that. What other things have I watched? Oh, I did watch, actually, last year, I think this was, I watched the entire series, somebody had put this up, of Hadley. I don't know if you remember Hadley. The Lonely Man on the Hill, as they dubbed it, with, the actor's name has now just gone out of my head. But I liked him very much, and his name has just escaped me now. But yes, he did. There was quite a few series, and I did watch all of those. I loved the house, and I loved his acting, and I watched it principally for his acting. And it was interesting, really, because I saw some interviews with him, the actor, who's it's annoying me now. I know his name. I do know his name. It's just I've temporarily parked it as I'm recording this. Anyway, I've seen interviews with him in latter life, and of course he's not quite so clipped and more rounded as a person than the character, but I like the character that he portrayed. I know he's done some other things, wasn't so keen on those. Hadley just had something, the big house, the big country house, the country life, the characters in it, and the butler chap, and I had two different butlers in the series, and the sort of constant drinking every time he would come in. Would you like a sherry, a dry sherry? Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you very much, James. James Hadley. You know. Just loved it. I just thought, it's a life that, of course, I don't live. And I suppose one watches these things for a little bit of a touch, to try and touch into somebody else's life vicariously and some of the problems that they have. And I, as I say, I just found he wore these very expensive, beautifully fitting suits that he had to go to Savile Row to have, apparently. And, you know, he didn't wear those in real life, or didn't. I think he's dead now, isn't he? And it was just very interesting, really. So I watched all those over, you know, not religiously, not every single day, but just I remember getting to the end and going, oh, what a shame. Anyway, those scripts were, I thought, were pretty good, actually. And I remember the thing that drew it to me was my mum used to watch them when I was a kid, and she would always be watching Hadley, and she was transfixed. And in a way, I remember it being on, but never used to watch it as a kid. I always think, well, what is this? Because it was drama, not action. You know, I used to watch The Professionals and The Sweeney and things like that. Whereas this was drama, and I never really understood it as a young kid, because it was just conversations that I couldn't really get. Now, of course, in my much further down the line in my life, of course, I understood some of the themes, and it was, of course, fascinating. And in a way, I don't know whether this makes any sense to people, but in a way, watching something that I knew my mother loved and would not miss, and the two different theme tunes they had, which theme tunes are etched on my mind. They in fact, theme tunes of television programmes seem to have more meaning to me than pop music. Isn't that strange? I'm fascinated by theme tunes and incidental music. But anyway, in a way, watching Hadley was having, by whatever it is, a connection to my dead mother. It was a sort of, almost as if I was watching it with my mother, the episodes of Hadley. Yeah. Anyway, so that was interesting. I think they're about the only ones I have watched. Usually it's an old film. I used to, you know, I've watched time and time again things like Murder, She Wrote, or whatever, Murder, She Saw, or whatever it was, with Margaret Rutherford, the Miss Marple. I think they did three or four films. Loved those. The Terry Thomas's, you know, Too Many Crooks and things like that. Just so many beautiful films. And of course, Lionel Jeffries. All these old characters from the past and these old films, Peter Sellers films and things, you know, absolutely One Way Stretch and I'm All Right, Jack, and all this sort of stuff. I suppose the draw, if I'm honest, or part of the draw, must be it's a time when there were... It's through the movies and through television, not so much in the 70s, but certainly in those older black and white films. It's a time when people dressed nicely, albeit they were dressing in the films, but I dare say that's a reflection of life. You couldn't get away with all those films dressing in a way that never really happened. So people dressing nicely in suits and you know, just having self-respect. I keep coming back to this. I worry about this word pride, but having some pride in how they look, you know, not to an extreme, but just being smart. There's something about that, people, that nice dresses that women used to wear, you know, covering them up, not sort of blatant flesh poking out, or the slovenly kind of clothes that you'll see people today with these terrible what do they call them? Not leg warmers, these black, often black, but could be other colours, tights. And then their bums on display and their pelvic and everything, you know, and just t-shirts, just, you know, without any much self-respect. They're not looking their best, let's say. And you don't have to spend a lot of money. Now, people might say, oh, Richard, you're just a snob. You know, people can dress however they like. And of course they can. But I, you know, I just am drawn to that era when people wore hats, wore nice dresses, wore nice suits and jackets and trousers and spoke clearly with different accents, as you find in some of the old films. And there was, of course, a certain innocence. You didn't, they're not swearing, and they're polite. Of course, it is a slight exaggeration of the times gone by, but it is a fair representation to a certain degree, and it's a sort of life that I wish I had lived in, I suppose, than the slightly harsher, drab world that we see with the utilitarian buildings and excuse my stomach making a growling noise and all of that, you know, the we haven't advanced terribly well is what I suppose. That back in the 40s and the 50s, although there were problems with people in different aspects of people's daily lives, we haven't really, we've gone so downhill in many ways. Yes, that we've got technical advances, but the technical advances actually hasn't really pulled us up. I think it's led us down rather than pulling us up. And when you see people in, you know, with typewriters and telephone boxes and these old beautiful styled cars, the motor cars of the old days, and life then was, it seems, and of course I've lived it as well, part of it, less stressful. People weren't worrying about 5G being radiated in their homes by modems. They weren't so concerned about so many of the problems that we have today. There were problems of the day, they were different problems, of course. But and of course, in a world of make-believe, of film and what have you, the problems are either exaggerated in one direction or others are not even introduced at all. But there was just something about that period in time that I think is very beautiful, and I can't help admire it. So I suppose in a way that's why I enjoy those old films, and the more modern ones, even the modern period films, I'm not so into. Occasionally there is a good period film of the modern era, but I can't, you know, you could name them on your hand, I suppose. But everything else is very dark. The content, it seems to me, I don't watch it, so I don't really know, but a lot of it seems to be very dark. It's not spiritually uplifting, and that seems to be something that's missing from any of the mainstream media. But as I say, I know that television in and of itself is a device to influence you in a way that you probably are not so easily influenced when reading books. There are subtleties in television and a hypnotic, you're put into this hypnotic trance as you watch, a very receptive trance. And of course, YouTube is full of bloody adverts and things like that. Television is full of secret messages and the scripts and you know, all of the stuff that we often talk about that people don't really fully grasp. And of course, it's replaced reading as a recreation in which people's vocabulary. And that's another thing, I think, what I love about the past is because there wasn't television, there was cinema, but people still read, more people read. And when you read, it's very difficult not to increase your vocabulary so that you're able to, so that when you converse with one another, you are using a wide range of words to describe things instead of the extremely limited. I mean, that's the other thing. When you go out and you sit in a cafe here and you listen to people, their ability to express themselves is extremely limited. And yes, they manage to convey messages, but the joy of language, especially the English language, with its multitudinous phrases, different words, subtleties, and so on, is just lost on these people, and they have no command of it, and they are unable to express fully their desires and things, and of course they don't practice. And this is a sweeping statement, of course. There are naturally people that do read, and naturally people who can express themselves very eloquently and delightfully, and conjure up amazing pictures of the mind as they speak. And, you know, when they are devouring a subject and they bring you into it, of course there are. But it isn't these days the norm. And that's so sad, because I think language is so satisfying to listen to. It is the difference between having, I suppose, a fine wine with subtleties, or a crafted beer, and a bland thing as well. You know, it's the difference between having a fully cooked, a nicely cooked, seasoned, grass-fed piece of steak that's absolutely exquisite and delicious and tasty and all of that, and a hamburger cooked at McDonald's. That's the difference. We have a McDonald's society on the whole, and that's such a sad thing, isn't it? Now, I'm not saying that we should eradicate that kind of society altogether, of course, but it would be nice to have a few more people who were able to express themselves. And it would be nice to have people who read, because books, as I've said many times on this platform, in this podcast, books are people's thoughts concentrated between two cardboard covers. When you write a book, as I'm writing with mine, your attention is focused on what it is you're trying to say, how you say it in the most expressive way that people can understand it, and entertaining way, if it's a novel, you want to keep people going to the end. And you're spending that time focusing what is it you're really trying to say. Now, I'm not saying I'm any good at it, by no means, but I am spending more time trying to express what I want to say within the pages of the book than if I just spoke it out loud. Like in The Naked Englishman, as you will hear, you can hear me reaching for the words, looking for the right way to describe something, or the right word, or forgetting, as I did with the actor who played Hadley, who it still hasn't come back into my mind, which is annoying. I'll look it up to satisfy myself. Or it'll pop into my mind. I know his bloody name, which is very annoying. It's an unusual name, isn't it? Slightly different name. But anyway, there it is. Anyway, these are just my thoughts, and you may completely disagree with me, and you, as people do, of course, and why wouldn't they? That's what makes the world a fascinating and interesting place. And some people find it difficult to disagree and think that people should all agree. And then when they realise that somebody's thoughts, desires, wishes, sensibilities are invariant to their own, then they don't know what to do. And again, I think this comes down to this dumbed down society, that they turn around and go, well, you're an idiot. and I may well be an idiot. Heaven forbid I have some very strange notions. I mean, I do. They're my notions, but we should all be allowed to express them, say them, talk about them, explore them together. And this is the joy of the Naked Englishman itself, is that one can take us, bring a subject to the table, and often the subjects come along and I have no notion what the subject is. So instead of coming along and saying, ah, here's a theory, here's an idea, here's a topic that I have worked on and found out, and this is what I want to tell you, it's very much work. It's a workshop of improvisation, as it were. It is a workshop. Say, here's a topic I'm going to discuss. It's just come into my head. I haven't fully formed it, but these are my initial thoughts. It is the first draft, as it were. The first draft, which is often why I say, oh, I might talk about that in the video, because something will occur. I can't even remember the subject I was mentioning at the beginning of this that I said I might talk about. Can't even remember that now. And I can't even remember what my views were. They're probably the same. They probably haven't changed. But, you know, so this is what this is. And then people, and I have had this, where people have said, ah, yes, Richard Vobes thinks this. I heard him on he's expressed it, these terrible views on the Naked Englishman. And of course, but sometimes in expressing these views, I'm thinking about a subject for the very first time and trying to pull it into English and put it in, instead of being vague thoughts, I'm putting it into a language. And as I do that, I may put it over clumsily, and I may put it over in a way that I thought that's what I thought, but actually on reflection, when I finish the recording, I might go, well, actually, I don't quite think that. I didn't put that over properly. My thoughts have changed. We all change our thoughts, and we're all allowed to change our thoughts, are we not? We can't all be stuck with the original thoughts that we had. Otherwise, we don't grow and develop. And let's face it, the ideas and thoughts that we had when we were kids are very different in lots of ways to what we think now. Although there are sometimes thoughts that you think, gosh, when I was a kid, I thought so-and-so. I've gone around the houses in my life thinking this thought has developed and is perhaps the polar opposite. But now I'm coming back to my original stance to think that actually I was closer to it when I was a child than I am now. And maybe that just means that I've become more childlike in older age, or maybe it means that the subject that I was originally addressing was not quite as sophisticated as I originally thought, or my approach to it was not quite as sophisticated, or need not be. Maybe I confused myself. Anyway, you know, we do this. To me, although some of these are not terribly intellectually stimulating, to me, having this chat with you, the gentle listener sitting by the fire with your smoking pipe and your hat and jacket and slippers and what have you, however you, this is how I imagine you listening, is a fantastic thing for me, first thing in the morning, because unless you're actually purposely sitting there recording something for an audience, you're first thing in the morning, you're probably not working your brain in the same way. And I've enjoyed the last 20 years very much having this stimulate, prodding, I suppose, the old mind pretty close to when I've risen in the morning. Anyway, there it is. I hope you have a lovely day, whatever you're doing, and I need to go and listen now to find out what the hell it was I was talking about at the beginning. And also look up the actor of James Herriot, not James Herriot, Hadley, and satisfy my, just cross that dot. I can't think why I can't remember it. It is annoying. But anyway, there we are. Until the next one, thank you for listening. I hope you have a lovely day, and I will catch you then. Until next time, goodbye.